Life is a journey. What's your story? Well, I'll tell you, there are a lot of stories at the St. Pete Museum of History. And one of the chief storytellers, also the executive director, is Rui Farias, and he is here with us today. He's going to be launching a podcast on Radio St. Pete. It is going to be called Historically St. Pete, and you will hear him here in studio and on our Let's Go guide. He'll be interviewing great people, history of baseball, the quite renowned Dr. Gary Mormino from USF. Welcome, Rui. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, you know, it's a sun-soaked day in St. Pete. Tell me a little bit, for those who may not have visited, and golly, shame on you if you haven't, about the museum and some of the remodeling that you've done and what's going on there.
Well, what most people don't know is that we've actually been there for 102 years on that same spot. So for the people who haven't been on there, definitely shame on you. We're located right there on the pier in downtown St. Pete. And we've been collecting and sharing the history of our community for well over 100 years down there.
Currently, you have a very provocative show on exhibit. Tell us a little bit about that. That will be there for Pathway to Eternity, Life, Death, and Afterlife.
Well, if you've been to the museum, I mean, I think the first time I walked into that building, I was about 8 years old. And the things, of course, that I remember that a lot of people my age and older remember are the two-headed calf and our Egyptian mummy. So for nearly a century, we've had an actual Egyptian mummy on display in the museum. And over the years, a lot of museums, including us, we were guilty of this, exhibited the mummified person as almost like an oddity, which I hate to say. And we sat down and talked about how we could better talk about ancient Egypt and the mummy that we have, because the number one question is always, why do you have a mummy in St. Petersburg, right?
That's a mummy. That's not a mummy for Mother's Day. That's a mummy.
That's right. So we got together, and my amazing staff, Jessica Breckenridge, or Jesse Breckenridge, who is our archivist and collections manager, ancient Egypt is her thing, and our curator, Nevin Sittler, we sat down and talked about, what's the best way we could present her. And so we built this exhibit called Pathway to Eternity that talks about ancient Egypt. It's interactive. It's got a bunch of touch screens that you can, play with and go through and learn not just about our mummy, but about the history of Egypt and the whole mummification process. And then, of course, we have a whole section on our mummy and how she ended up in St. Petersburg and why we have her in this building.
Well, you know what? I'm not going to tell that story on air because you have to go to the museum and find
right.
it. But tell us a little bit about, I was amazed I saw the two-headed calf. And I just, to me, when I go to an event or a fundraiser there, I have to go visit. Tell us a little bit how the museum came to have that.
Well, originally the building was an aquarium building. And in 1920, a group of people led by Mary Wheeler Eaton created the St. Petersburg Historical Society. They decided they wanted to start collecting and preserving artifacts from this, basically brand new city. I mean, we were just coming into our own, right, in 1920. The storm of October 1921, the last time, knock on wood, St. Petersburg has been hit by a direct hurricane, flooded the building. And Mary Wheeler convinced, once it got vacated by the aquarium, Mary Wheeler convinced the city and everybody involved that that needed to be our museum. So that's how we started. We've been on the spot, not in the same building. That building, the 1920s building, was raised in 1950, and the new building built in 1951, which still exists, which is currently our main gallery during this time period. So we've been there for 100 years, and in the things that people actually see, we have 7 separate galleries throughout the museum. So when they walk through, and the things that they see is just a fraction of what we actually hold. I mean, we have tens of thousands of objects that we have in our collections.
It's amazing. So let's kind of take a little bit of a tour. The American Soldier, with Memorial Day coming up in May, Conflicts, Shipwrecks, and the Home Front. That's an exhibit that's been there, 30 images of award-winning American Soldier. How did that exhibit come to be?
Everything that you see in that's right now, it's located in our main gallery, and everything you see in that exhibit is part of our collections and archives. Some years ago, about 10 years ago, we arranged for a traveling exhibit called American Soldier, this amazing Pulitzer Prize-winning photography exhibit, to come to St. Petersburg and come to the museum. So we had it on display, and it went away, like traveling exhibits do. We did keep in touch with the owner of the exhibit, and one day, out of the blue, I got a phone call from her, and she told me that they were taking the exhibit off the road, and she wanted to donate it to us. So we now own that exhibit. So what is up on the walls today, and again, it's called the American Soldier because it talks about more the humanity of American soldiers and the conflict that, you know, during the different conflicts from the Civil War to current day, basically. So it's not a war exhibit where you see battle things. Again, it's more of what the soldiers went through during these conflicts. So it's an amazing exhibit.
The museum is all about the St. Petersburg experience. One of my favorites, my dad's favorite, is the baseball exhibit, America's Pastime, Helping Share American History. 5,000 baseballs, Schrader's Little Cooperstown. It's actually certified by the Guinness World Records. Take a little bit into there. And Babe Ruth, I think people didn't know that Babe Ruth lived here.
He did, in, well, multiple homes here. So when you walk into that exhibit, first of all, you're just overwhelmed because there's just baseballs everywhere, right? And I still remember to this day when I was, before I was director, I was on the board of the museum, and I remember when it first came up that this exhibit could come, or this collection, because this collection is all owned by one gentleman, Dennis Schrader, who lives in Tampa. He owns all the balls, they're on loan to the museum. When, you know, the idea came to bring them to the museum, of course, in the back of my head, I'm thinking, why do you want to bring 5,000 baseballs, right? And then we saw what the exhibit could look like, and it's pretty amazing. We use baseball to basically teach history, and, it, you know, baseball parallels, especially here in St. Petersburg, parallels our history, you know, from the late 1800s. So when you walk in the exhibit and you look to the right, the first thing that you see is the Hall of Fame section, and there's huge section of these amazing players that, of course, everyone's always heard of, right? From Shoeless Joe Jackson to Babe Ruth, you name it. All those players that you see on that wall at one time played in St. Petersburg. So when you go through there,
that's cool.
You learn things about not just the sport itself, but our city. And one of the cool things about the exhibit is it's not just baseball players. There are celebrities, there's politicians. One of the most unique balls that I always point out when we do tours is a ball signed by Fidel Castro. So he and this is explained in, you know,
who knew
exactly, and we love telling stories. Obviously, that's our job. But it's explained in the exhibit that Fidel Castro was offered a Major League Baseball contract, turned it down to go back to Cuba. So when you look at that ball, you've got to wonder, man, how the world would have been different had he signed that contract. You know?
Unbelievable. So, yeah. So that, you know, we always say there's a story in every artifact. And mm-hmm. Rui, you were a history teacher.
I was.
And yeah. How does this museum, it's like a celebration of being able to teach and engage and entertain every day. Tell me a little bit about how you came to come to the museum.
I had left the business world, seemed like a lifetime ago, to go into teaching. History was always, you know, my thing. I've been a history geek since as long as I can remember. So I was a history teacher at St. Pete High. I taught Florida history. I actually started a St. Pete history class, which transformed into a Florida history class. So I taught Florida history and U.S. history. But to create the curriculum for that St. Pete history class, I spent a whole summer in the archives at the museum, and that's how I got to know everybody.
Wow.
And then shortly after that, Leslie Curran, who was on city council at the time, invited me to join the board of the museum, so I did. In my previous life, I used to manage facilities. I worked for a company called Global Spectrum. So when the museum decided that it wanted to hire a part-time paid director, because it was volunteer-run prior to that, I just threw my hat in the ring, never expecting to get the job, but I got the job. So it's a dream come true. I've loved that museum. I used to pedal my bike down there when I was a little kid. I grew up in downtown St. Pete, so I pedal my bike down there every Saturday and hang out, and, you know, it was just, it's a dream job for me.
You know, I always said that I wanted to just hang out in the wine cellars at different places here in town, but I think what I want to do someday is come and hang out in the artifacts storage area with you, Rui, because, you know, that could be a whole podcast in itself. The Sunshine City Gallery is one of my favorites. I mean, the first post office, the wonder that is Web City, and I think you've got something coming up on that. I think you're working on a little
something on Web City.
A little something,
yes.
That we'll keep for your podcast.
Yeah.
The remnants of World War II. Tell me a little bit about that St. Petersburg unique pass.
So Nevin actually did a great job curating this. When we actually brought in the American Soldier exhibit, we didn't have enough space for it. So where that gallery is now, that Sunshine City Gallery, that St. Pete Gallery, was office space, basically. So we converted office space into gallery space. We knocked open holes in walls and, you know, did all kinds of stuff like that. And so he took what was in the main gallery and pared it down to some wonderful stories about the city's history, dating back to pioneer times. Like, for instance, on exhibit is a cannonball that was dug out of the ground in Big Bayou when the Union gunboats sailed into Big Bayou.
Who knew
and
that?
Bombed Mel Miranda's. So listen, that's, you know, the Battle of Big Bayou. That's our claim to fame for the Civil War, right? It lasted about 15 minutes.
And not as long as my podcast.
Yeah, luckily, you know, the only casualties were cows. So, you know, there are no.
Hence the two-headed cow. Right, exactly. That's my story.
Not really, but that's good. I like that. We'll go with that. So there's a lot of cool things. Like you said, the first post office, which was John Bethel's desk. And if you, you know, when we give tours through the museum, you can see the little slots in the desk where people's mail would be. And there were more people on the tours than there were living in the city at that time. And then, you know, there's all kinds of cool things about Webb City, about World War II. And people don't realize, I mean, you know, we think about World War II and, you know, you think obviously Europe and the Pacific, but the home front was just incredible. And that's what, you know, historians will tell you what really won the war is what happened here on the home front. And we were a part of that. St. Petersburg was a huge part of that, actually.
Absolutely. In fact, we just read Florida Girls, L.O. Kirshner's podcast that's coming up. And, boy, I learned a lot about the Webbs and everything else. I want to ask you about an exhibit that's near and dear to my heart, and because Mother's Day is coming up. It's not open yet. Meddling the Women Who Built St. Pete? Is that?
It is open.
It is,
yes.
Open, excuse me. From the peninsula's first settlers to the trailblazers of today, women have always had a hand. They were referred to as meddling. I have been called a meddling female. So tell us all about this exhibit now at the St. Petersburg Museum of History.
So this thing whole thing started as a bet. You know, Jesse Breckenridge, our archivist, I think it was like 2 years ago, she came up to me and said, I want to do something like every day on our social media for Women's History Month. I said, so you're going to find something, you know, 30-odd different women that did amazing things in the city. So she was off. And, of course, she had to prove me wrong. And she did, and then some. So that, pretty much the exhibit came out of that. And in her, you know, she dug into, her and her volunteers dug into numerous rabbit holes and discovered all kinds of good stuff. And more we were discovering that, you know, when you talk about St. Pete history, and this has happened, you know, for 100 and some odd years in this town, you know, who do you hear about? You hear about John Williams, and you hear about Perry Snell and Walter Fuller and all these guys. Well, you don't hear about Sarah Williams, right? Or, you know, and you don't hear about Mary Wheeler Eaton. You don't hear about some of these women who truly got things done and created this city and don't get credit for it because, you know, of the time period that they were around. So this exhibit takes you through the pioneering women of St. Pete. On exhibit is one of the original plot maps of the city, signed by Sarah Williams, the wife of John Williams. We actually have the agreement that was signed by Sarah Williams that gave the land to Peter Demenz to bring the Orange Belt Railway here. So women were heavily involved. And even if you look at plot maps, which we have in our archives in the late teens, early 1920s, where you see the little plot areas marked out in the owners' names on them, there are a lot of women on that list, which is just unheard of, right?
Right.
In the 1920s, right. To be property owners like that.
I actually see this as a documentary. I see this as apply to South Arts and make this film. This is amazing
stuff. I'm telling
you.
Well, I keep bugging Jesse that this needs to be her first book. I mean, this is just an amazing story. And, you know, even today's the exhibit even talks about the women in office and the women in business here in St. Petersburg today. And it's pretty spectacular. And the title itself, so we were doing some research. And it was a historian that dug something up. I don't know if it was a newspaper article. I don't remember off the top of my head. But it was a comment about, you know, those women that were meddling, basically, in the affairs of men. And as soon as I looked at that, I'm like, oh, this is definitely the name of this exhibit.
And that's the kind of guy that the executive director is of the museum, St. Petersburg Museum of History. Maria, I want to turn a little bit to some of the events coming up. Of course, you have your happy hour with the historian, which we have had some of those on Radio St. Pete, Gwendolyn Reese. Coming up is Dr. Tim Spofford, Education for All, 70 Years After Brown versus Board. June 13th, Dr. David Head, Britain's Loyal Colonies. Jeff Birardelli, our very own Channel 8 Hurricanes, 100 Years of Close Calls. And then you're giving a talk on August 8th, you, Peter Clark, and Leah Beery, Turning Liquid into Land. How did this series get started? It's a terrific series.
Well, you know, gosh, this is, I think we're in our 11th year now of doing this. And usually when you talk about, you know, you're going to a historical lecture and you look at people, well, you know, their eyes kind of roll back in their head. You think back to your 11th grade U.S. history teacher, right? Which I take offense to, because that's what I was. But anyway, so we wanted these to be fun, because in my mind, I don't read fiction because there's things that truly happen in history, weird enough, right? So there's so many cool stories. So Nevin started reaching out to some of these historians around town. Then, you know, I jumped in and we started, you know, reaching out across the state. And it is an amazing event that is typically sold out every month.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And I'll tell you, honestly, I don't think there's a better event at any museum in the country. So thank you for that. You also have a number of other things going on. You have the Segway tours, the ghost tours, the trolley tours, the walking tours. Now it's the cruise tour. Tell us a little bit about the historic cruises that you're starting.
Well, that's kind of where the August 8th happy hour came from that I'm doing with the Tampa Bay Watch folks, because so we started doing trolley tours with Star Trolley, and we kind of did it once a month as just a thing we wanted to provide for our, you know, our visitors and our, you know, our customers, and it too was getting sold out every tour. We started a walking tour, and of course you had to have ghost tours, right? So we had some ghost tours. And then, you know, we met with the Tampa Bay Watch folks who run eco tours, you know, from the pier. And we talked about how cool it would be if we had a tour that talked about how the waterfront was built. Because, you know, people don't realize this, but, you know, Beach Drive is called Beach Drive because that's pretty much where the water went up to. So, you know, a lot of our downtown waterfront land, especially like where the museum is today, is all dredge and fill. It's fake land, as I used to tell my students, right? We live in a fake city built out of, you know, we just made things up. It's Florida, and that's what we do, right? So we started talking about this, and I wrote the script, basically, or the tour on the historic side of it. So, you know, we leave the pier, we sail, you know, along the waterfront into Coffee Pot, and I talk about Perry Snell and Snell Isle and stuff like that. All the historic stuff of it, and then they jump in on which I would like to think that these guys didn't know what they were doing in the early.
That'll
teens,
be our
late
story.
20s.
That'll yeah. be our story.
But what dredge and fill? How bad it damaged the bay and the environment, and now the process of what they're doing with Tampa Bay Watch and other organizations are like them to bring the bay back to life, which they have. I mean, they've done an amazing job with that. So we sail from the pier up to Coffee Pot, and then we head down to Big Bayou and Coquina Key and talk about the Battle of Big Bayou and stuff like that. So it's 2 hours on the water. You can't beat it, right? And you get to see this amazing skyline that our city has become, and it's just
doing it. You're going to continue doing this once a month.
We're doing it. We're doing it on, I think it's the third Saturday of each month, and now we've started doing them on Thursdays, like sunset tours.
Love it. St. Yeah. Petersburg Museum of History, historically different. I mean, if I ever get married, this is where I'm getting married. I'm getting married between the baseballs and the mummies. But I will tell you this. It's 3335 2nd Avenue Northeast on the St. Pete Pier. St. Pete Pier, you were there, and now the St. Pete Pier has enhanced that whole experience. And you can find them online, historystpete.org. Sign up for the newsletter, Rui. We look forward to having Historically St. Pete, your new podcast, once a month. Tell us anything that we didn't ask you that you want to share with us.
Well, we do have memberships. So if you're a longtime resident or a short-time resident of St. Petersburg, please think about becoming a member. People have the misconception that they think that we are a city museum, as in we are city employees and funded by the city. The city has been very gracious to us as far as our, you know, where we are, where we're located, and in, you know, funding us in grants and different projects that we've done. But we are a 501c3 nonprofit, so we rely on memberships and events and admissions to, you know, to keep the museum alive and keep history alive in St. Pete. So,
well, thanks to Rui, because history is alive, and I want you all to think global and go local. Please get to this museum. You heard the podcast. Tune in all the time, RadioSt.Pete.com. Go to the audio blogs. Visit the museum. Take the trolley tours. Cruise, but learn more about history with the St. Pete Museum of History. Thank you, Rui.
Thank you for having me.